I'm David Korn.
And I'm Rachel Sklar.
Together
we're Blogging Heads TV.
Good to see you again, so to speak, Rachel. How you been?
I've been well, thank you, David. And
Pretty good, although I don't know about you. I wouldn't mind if they started wrapping things up in this Democratic presidential primary.
Yes, but it's all about you.
Last time we talked, you were complaining that you thought the MSM was not being fair when it came to coverage of Hillary Clinton.
I don't think I was limiting it to the MSM.
Okay, well, MSM Plus.
Right, okay. The M.
Okay.
The M.
Yeah, all media, the AM.
Okay.
So
wow,
tell
me. That shortcut really worked, yeah.
Yeah, so tell me today, after Hillary's triple wins on Tuesday night, and when there's more talk than ever about how the media is covering the race, do you think that criticism still stands?
Well, I think it's I think that criticism has certainly been brought out into the open, and I think that that's actually sort of exciting because I think that it was a while before the media would look at itself, and I think it's always healthy. Sunlight is the best disinfectant and that sort of thing. And I don't think that the media as a whole should generally want to have sort of leave itself open to the type of criticism that it's been open to in the past in terms of its coverage of Al Gore, in terms of its coverage leading up to the Iraq War. I think it's a good thing to be kicking the tires on the media. And I do think that the media sort of waking up and sort of looking at Barack Obama more critically is a good thing for everyone. I don't necessarily know that necessarily reflects a change in the approach to Hillary. I think it's a more nuanced thing that I sort of couldn't say definitely yes or definitely no. I think that we could all find examples of I'll find examples of sort of fairer treatment versus more typical Hillary treatment, but that comes with her being Hillary and having so much baggage.
Yeah, well, to me what's interesting is how the campaigns are trying to play the media card, so to speak.
Oh, they really are.
I mean, like in the weeks before, particularly in the days before Ohio and Texas, I had a number of Clinton people go on and on to me about how fair, what was wrong with her campaign was not Hillary, not her strategy, not the voters, but the media. That the media was just giving Obama a pass, and that was their number one explanation.
Well,
I mean, it's a way to really sort of not have to look at your own tires or kick your own tires, to use your metaphor. But that was the self-reinforcing justification and explanation that they had come up with, and then they started going. I think they got the meds right in terms of the right mashup of negative attacks to throw at Barack Obama in the week before the Ohio and Texas, and he helped them by giving them some of the NAFTA stuff to talk about, and Tony Rezko helped them by conveniently scheduling his trial for that week. But they kept saying the media has to answer, has to deal with this, has to answer asking these questions. But the thing that they do, which kind of ticks me off a little bit as a journalist,
is the campaign.
I mean, I'm on a conference call every day with these with Clinton people, and they keep saying the media, isn't asking Obama these critical questions about Tony Rezko. They don't have any evidence that supports the questions. They just come up with questions that they pose them in a way to make them sound like allegations, and then they say these are significant unanswered questions. Well, wait a second. If the answer is just no, if reporters have looked into this, as they have with some Rezko matters in Obama, and haven't come up with anything on this, did Barack Obama get special favors from Tony Rezko when it came to jobs for his allies? That's an important question. You have to ask Barack Obama that question. Barack Obama and his campaign have said nothing like that happened, but they keep saying it's an important question. And then the media goes off and goes, oh, I have an important question for you.
And
sometimes asking a question which has, for which you have no basis for, but doing it repeatedly at the goading of the other side, isn't good journalism either, just because you're being tough now on the person you weren't tough on before.
Interview. Sorry. Thanks. Sorry. I'm in a broom closet here. I'm in a supply closet. we're really high tech here.
If it's publishers' clearinghouse, let them in.
No, because the conference room in our office of the Huffington Post, I made the announcement to the room, but anyhow, there's really bad acoustics, so that this is the best place to do it. So there's supplies and coats and a photocopier right here.
I just hope there aren't any fumes there, because then you have a workplace safety issue.
No, it's all good.
No softens.
But
anyway, so that's, I mean, the issue of being tough and not being tough is too simple, a filter to put the media coverage through. I mean, you can be tough, but that doesn't make it good coverage, and that doesn't mean the tough questions you're asking are legitimate questions.
You raised a whole bunch of things here. Let me try and break it down. The first thing you said was, being on the campaigns using this, and I think that there are two parts of this. One is, how does the media cover Barack Obama, and the other is how the Clinton campaign uses that in their conference calls and in their spinning. I think that you have to divide those out. I think that it's the Clinton campaign is going to throw every question that they want asked out there. Some of them will be legitimate, some of them will not be legitimate. But they don't set the terms for the media. The media should independently be wanting to ask these questions and examine on an ongoing basis this person who is the front runner for the Democratic candidate for President of the United States. I think that that's legitimate. I think it's pretty well established based on that San Antonio press conference the other day that Barack Obama is unused to grilling from reporters. I just did a post on this today, and what seemed to come from that press conference is everybody used the same line, which is how Obama closed it, which is, come on guys, we're running late, and you've already asked eight questions. So if eight questions is the litmus test for what constitutes a reasonable press conference, I think that says something about how much Barack Obama has been available to the press. And there was an article in the Politico about how the Obama campaign effectively keeps the press at arm's length. And by the way, anything I'm saying has nothing to do with the fact that, let's get it out of the way. Yes, Hillary was very bad at press dealings. Yes, the Clinton campaign has had to, become more available. We're going to just treat these two campaigns separately. But there was also...
I may not abide by that, but go ahead.
I think that, that is the only way to do this. The only way to do this is to take the same standard and apply it equally to both campaigns. You have to do it that way. Otherwise, how can you not say that you're not showing favoritism to one another? Just in terms of, Obama's availability, something at the caucus blog, in their write-up of the San Antonio press conference, noted that Obama's press conferences are few and far between and rather short affairs. So this is all giving a picture of his press availability, and I think that what emerged from the accounts of the San Antonio press conference is that the media was firing at him with a lot of different questions. They were asking about Resco, they were asking about NAFTA Gate. And there were, the New York Post was apparently asking him about Farrakhan. These are all, and this was the day before the primaries. It's not the greatest timing, but sometimes timing's not on your side. And that's how you got to roll as a candidate or as president.
Well, I'm not saying it's a sad or glad fact of political life, but it certainly is a fact that candidates who get along better with the press tend to get better coverage, or at least there's a certain advantage or gain to that.
Sure.
Or at least you forestall, sniping that otherwise might not occur.
Absolutely.
John McCain
and it
is
certainly doesn't help to put
John
your
McCain
press
is
in yeah. the in the bathroom either.
Yeah, exactly. John McCain is the famous case study from the year 2000.
I think 2008.
Well, less so now. It's not as much fun to be with him for journalists as it was in 2000.
Sure,
although
he still
is open and he still answers.
Today.
On the campaign trail, he's very easy to talk to. I and other reporters have found complete access to him in New Hampshire and other states.
But what
Barack Obama is going to have to do and realize, and it's just these obvious things sometimes just take a while to become obvious to candidates or to campaigns is that, you know, you can't fight the press. Bill Bradley tried that in the 2000 campaign, tried to stay aloof and away from the press, and got a lot of stories then about how aloof he was. And Barack Obama now is running into what is a pretty dangerous period for him. He most likely will win the Wyoming caucus this Saturday and do well, if not, and probably win Mississippi Tuesday. But then there's 5 weeks until Pennsylvania on April 22nd, in which nothing is going to happen except campaigning and media coverage of the campaigning. There will be no caucuses. There will be no elections for anyone to point to, neither he nor Hillary. Up to now,
there might be debates.
There might be a debate or two. We don't know. But debates too are often shaped, you know, if there's nothing that comes right after them, like an election, are shaped by how people play it in the media. Now, up to now, I will argue that I don't believe the media coverage of this race has had much impact on the actual outcome, that is, the votes and caucuses and primaries, because I think people who voted got as much information as they wanted from a bunch of sources. And while
how do you have that information?
This is why. Listen. I'll tell you why. Do you know how many people have voted so far in Democratic primaries?
A lot. Like 25 million?
Very good. 27 million people have voted. How many people watch Chris Matthews on a good night?
You know, I didn't know there were going to be pop quizzes here, by the way.
I'm sorry. I'm asking the viewers. It's a rhetorical question.
What I'm saying is,
it's 400,000 people.
We talked about this last time. It's not just who watches Chris Matthews on a given night. It is... if there is a specific,
but what
clip,
I'm saying is the
is
people
it
who
be
vote
played on
listen,
different
listen, most
outlets.
People who
be,
vote.
Well, no, but you just asked how many people watch Chris Matthews on a different night and a specific night, and I'm saying that is no longer the metric that applies when you talk program at a specific time.
Well, that's right.
Into the YouTube effect and the embeddable clip effect and the fact that it's going to be picked up on other networks.
But what I'm saying is there is such a plethora of information out there, and I don't think people were taking their cues from the New York Times the way they used to. I think 20 years ago, media coverage of the race, in which there were very firm and fast gatekeepers, and there were about seven of them all together, had much more of an impact on how people could perceive the race. Now, in fact, because of YouTube, whether it's Will I Am or people doing their own campaigns, putting up
or
their
Jack
own information,
Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson, whatever you want, the impact of how a New York Times story or a New York Times, the general coverage of the tenor of their coverage is just not going to have as much of an impact on people as media coverage used to.
I'm going to disagree with you, but first of all, I'm going to say that that's why I'm glad at the beginning that I clarified and specified it wasn't just that quote-unquote MSM, but it was all media, because I do think the landscape has shifted and that, information is becoming available in all corners of the internet, and it's also interesting what sort of rise to the top. In the past election cycles, we didn't have things like Dig or sort of aggregators that push things out into the consciousness in a different sort of way, which I think is really interesting. It's sort of a clip culture that you see now in just a huge way. You've got Red Lasso.
But it's clips that aren't controlled by the big media.
Evolved.
But the clips can come from anywhere. They can be a mashup of the famous Apple 1984 ad.
Sure.
I mean, it can come from anywhere. So I think up to now, you can make the case that media, including everything, has influences of the race, and that's almost ipso facto. But in sort of looking at how it's covered by, by the mainstream media and the big media, my guess is that that's just not, it doesn't have as strong an impact as it did in the days when I was a kid and you were not yet conceived.
Okay, whatever. Well, thank you for that. I think that, I don't know that anybody's disputing that. The media landscape has changed enormously.
My point was, we got a little sidetracked,
you've still got, in terms of old-fashioned reporting and investigative work and being on the plane with Obama to catch him in a soundbite, like that is still the hardcore MSM. And so that's the stuff that is trickling down and being commented on and, you know, clipped and digged or dug or whatever. I mean, so I think that, I think it is, you know, it's a little flip to say that they don't matter in the same way. Not that they don't matter in the same way, they don't matter anymore. I think it's that they don't matter in the same way anymore, and that the influence, it's sort of like a broken...
But we got sidetracked because my point was, while I was arguing... at least I got sidetracked, because the point I was trying to make was that while I thought, you know, the earlier results of the campaign were not driven by media coverage, the next 5 weeks, well, you know, after Mississippi, when you're 5 weeks without any real events happening, like campaign, like elections and caucuses, all that people are going to have to look at if they care about anything is indeed the media coverage. And I think this is going to put a put more of an impetus on Barack Obama to do what is the obvious play here. You know, go on a bus back and forth on Interstate 76 or 80, he can take his pick, going from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, back and forth, and have reporters on the bus with him and talk, you know, the things that, you know, the Clinton people have thrown at him recently, talk all that stuff to death in the first couple of days, you know, here, and then just have reporters on with him all the time. And
he takes your advice. And so, I mean, so far, that has not been how apparently he's been operating. And, you know, by all accounts of that press conference, you know, he seemed to be uncomfortable being lobbed these hardball questions. I do actually, before we proceed, I want to address what you said about Rezko, because, you know, when I read Lynn Sweet, who's a reporter from the Chicago Sun-Times, and says she's, you know, she's been covering Barack Obama for years, she and her colleagues, and she made the point that it was sort of the instigators of a lot of that hardballing and inquisitiveness on the part of the scrum of reporters in San Antonio was the presence of these hard-boiled Chicago reporters who had, you know, been covering Obama and sort of knew, not necessarily that they knew more about the Rezko affair than other press members necessarily, but they had been present for other press conferences Obama had given and other ways that he had fielded those questions. And the observation Lynn Sweet made was that he had been very careful about sort of saying, well, if you have specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But that was his answer something like four times. And her point was, when she was asking these questions, I guess it was Carol Marin, I can't remember how to... her last name. She had said, she had asked a question and Obama had seemed to be exasperated and said, this is secondhand from the Lynn Sweet report, you know, you've asked me this before, and the Lynn Sweet piped up and said, well, you know, for the benefit of these reporters who haven't heard it. So I think that I'm going to go by what Lynn Sweet says, who's been covering him, if she's going to say that he has not been as forthcoming with these questions about sort of nailing down the details of exactly what the deal was with the land deal and what his relationship with Rezko was, then, you know, it's time to fess up with that.
Well, my point was that on the Rezko stuff, you know, what the Clinton campaign is goading the press into doing is asking questions on the basis of no facts and saying, you know, these tremendous unanswered questions, and they're basically just imagining what possible questions might exist somewhere in this hypothetical universe of theirs. And, my advice to all candidates is, you know, take all questions on and, you know, talk them to death. And that's the best way to deal with this. You know, the drip, drip, drip. If there is a drip, 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 that's terrible. But if you look at the story that the Times did on Rezko just over the weekend, it was Saturday or Sunday, they said there were new questions about Obama and Rezko, but if you read it, the questions really were not new questions about Obama and Rezko. There were new questions about Rezko and how Rezko happened to have the money he needed at the time to buy this little strip of land because he was in bankruptcy court, and he was having problems with creditors and all these other issues. So the story there was not about questions about Obama. It was a question about Rezko, who was indeed an interesting case.
Go ahead.
No, he's an interesting case study in political corruption and cronyism, and a guy who had, you know, his personal financial fortune seemed to be somewhat of a pyramid scheme involving foreign investors and pizza chains in Illinois. And so I mean, listen, I'm an investigative reporter, and I encourage anyone to dig into any of this stuff. But you know, so far, and asking the, you know, these unanswered questions haven't really produced much in the way of answers.
Well, I think that that's actually a really good cautionary tale for how to deal with the press. You know, when you aren't, I mean, this Resco name has been floating around for ages, and it was certainly brought into the forefront during that particularly contentious debate. Was it? No, it wasn't the LA debate. It was the debate before. It's hard to keep them all straight, all 20 of them. But we all know it. It was the moment, you know, Obama fired it at Hillary. Mm. That, you know, he was fighting Ronald Reagan while she was on the board at Walmart, and she fired back that she was fighting the Ronald Reagan, you know, the fallout from Reaganism, while he was, you know, hanging out with his slumlord friend Resco. I mean, so we all remember that moment. So that, you know, at that point, Resco kind of burst into the forefront, and without facing it head on, that's when you get sort of uncomfortable questions are being asked, or, you know, as
right.
trial
well,
unfolds,
well,
more
well,
questions
well,
for
well,
Obama.
I still,
you know,
I still
that's
think
that's the classic media thing, right? Is to put a big question mark and say, like, these are questions. It's not saying that like troubling questions versus troubling answers.
Hillary Clinton, drug dealer? Question mark?
Well, sure.
We're just asking the question. But, you know, going back to our
it's a slippery slope. I think that slides way down at the bottom. But I do think that, you know, like I said at the very beginning, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And, you know, I think it would have been so wise of them just to come out with, like everything, and, you know, anything you ever needed to know about Resco. It's like, here you go.
But, you know, but the thing that you don't talk to the Clinton people, but today they started a new offensive, which is, they accused Barack Obama and his people of being Kenneth Starrs because they're asking questions about Hillary Clinton. Now, the thing is, okay, they're goading reporters to ask questions about Barack Obama's financial dealings, real estate transaction with Tony Resco. There's apparently just one transaction. But then when the Barack Obama people come out and say, well, wait a second, what about the fact she's not revealing tax records? We don't know about Bill Clinton's, you know, deals with international businessmen working with foreign dictators and all of that. The Times has done some good pieces on that, New York Times. They say, wait a second, now you're acting like Kenneth Starr, digging all this stuff up. Maggie Williams was, you know, became chief of staff to Hillary Clinton, you know, campaign not too long ago, the campaign manager. And as far as I know, I was the only one who wrote a piece about her involvement in the Clinton fundraising scandals of the 90s. Now, you said that
Ariana published a column she had written at the time about
Ariana did repurposed a column she did back then.
Repurposed,
I went back
for the edification of our readers.
But you did that, and I did that, but I didn't see anybody else dig into any of this. I mean, your premise is that Hillary Clinton's been getting, you know, a lot of bad, you know, bad coverage, and that people have been, you know, tough on her. My premise was that in some ways they haven't been tough enough. And there's still a lot that, you know, from her past, whether it's the Walmart deals and other things like that, that the media should be looking at as much as they're looking at Tony Resco. I don't see her submitting herself to long press conferences about that. And I do see their campaign trying to immunize themselves from that sort of questioning by saying, wait a second, this is like being Kenneth Starr if you ask us questions about this.
I'm not on the mailing list. I'm not on, like, the press list or the conference calls or anything like that for either of the campaigns.
But you have to see how it's interesting to watch what each campaign does and how the press reacts.
Yeah, I recognize that, and I sort of see, you know, for example, I know that, like, you know, the Clinton campaign has been pushing the use of the term NAFTAgate, and that's, you know, popped up as an easy shorthand. I mean, listen, we've got an easy shorthand.
And now there's a Canadian Broadcast Corporation story that cast a lot of doubt on the conventional story so far. But the NAFTAgate thing has already stuck because reporters took that phrase from the Clinton campaign.
But this is my point, is that I'm just, you're throwing a lot out here, and I want to just get back to the original point, which is, you know, when you say that the Clinton campaign is throwing a lot of stuff at Obama and making a lot of claims, like, the Obama campaign is doing the same thing, to my understanding. You know, they're both forwarding, you know, as much Oppo research and talking points as possible, and that's sort of how it goes. And it's up to the press to sort of say, this looks interesting and legitimate, this doesn't. I mean, like dealing with any publicist, really, you know?
Exactly.
You have to make your own call about, you know, what information is worth chasing down, what's worth your time, and, you know, what is most beneficial to the public. And I think that, you know, in terms of just getting back to the original question here, which was, you know, how do we think things will proceed now that the press is ostensibly sort of looking, you know, looking a little, shining a light a little brighter on Obama. Like, I think that is best for everyone. And you know why? Because it's getting everything out of the way now. And not, weeks before the election. Like, better now. It's going to make both candidates, whoever ends up getting the nomination, it's going to make both of them better candidates. It's going to make both of them smarter, savvier, less inclined to, you know, think they can shove something under the rug, less inclined to try and dodge something. It's going to make them more effective in messaging, in dealing with reporters, in recognizing the importance of being accountable and transparent. And it's going to all happen over the next few weeks, you know, ideally. And it's all going to happen now rather than, you know, a week and a half before the general.
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a reporter first, and I want to see as much information come out. I want to see candidates vetted, tested, questioned fairly, non-exploitatively by the media on all sides. I just think that there, you and others have argued that Hillary has gotten roughed up more than Barack Obama in general, maybe, you know, up to a couple of days ago, I still think there are things that she's skated by on. And maybe, hopefully now, as, you know, the press turns towards Barack Obama and he is forced to defend himself more, he'll spur them on to ask legitimate questions of her.
I think that's
and the public will learn more, and hopefully the media won't forget about that other guy out there named John McCain.
Sure, and that goes to what you were saying before, and, you know, the thing I raised as well about how the press has this, like, romantic view of McCain, and everything anybody ever says about him and any sort of criticism that is ever said about John McCain is prefaced by, you know, he's a war hero, he's a true American hero. Like, that's a pretty good buffer for criticism to have.
You think?
Yeah, exactly, because, listen, he is, like, you know, but that is different than, it's like, okay, this guy unquestionably is a hero and he's a good guy and he's likable and his heart's probably in the right place, but that doesn't necessarily mean that his strategies are in the right place or his policies are in the right place. And I think it's always important to remember things like bomb Iran, you know, like that's, or we're going to be in Iraq for 100 years, hell, maybe 1,000 or 1,000,000 years, or whatever it is that he said. Like,
well, he said that to me, and it was, you got the quote right. I, you know, that was my story, and he said,
okay, well,
1,000 years and all 1,000,000 years. No. So, that's an instance where, you know, a piece of reporting on the internet has now become, you know, a meme, and, you know, he does get asked about that by Tim Russert and others, and I am sure the Democrats won't let him forget that.
No, and as the press well, they does. Shouldn't. It was a boneheaded thing to say.
But you're right. It will be. You know, the other thing that's interesting, the interesting dynamic here is that Barack Obama, more so than Hillary, is new, not as much as known. Known about him, he hasn't grown up, so to speak, you know, on the national stage, while John McCain has and Hillary Clinton has to an extent already. So, you know, the media doesn't have to do the, you know, who are these people stories as much, or maybe they feel they don't have to, about Hillary or McCain the way they do about Barack Obama, which they certainly will once he, you know, if he gets the nomination. And so you imagine that, you know, the press, how the press will handle Barack Obama and John McCain differently, just on terms of familiarity. I mean, you've been advocating, I agree with you, you know, equal treatment for all parties concerned. But
it's
when you have
simple,
a guy,
when you break it down to that, then it just eliminates, you know, all sense of bias. You know, the same standard applied equally. And you know what's so funny is that that's something that David Plouffe. Oh no, actually, it wasn't David Plouffe. I just wanted to say that. David Axelrod was, I read it in the Hotline logometer. quoting David Axelrod as turning it around and saying that, you know, Hillary Clinton hasn't been vetted and we want to know about her tax returns, and in taking your exact point and saying, like, we just want the vetting to be equal. We want an equal standard applied equally between the candidates. I was like, hallelujah, let's have it. Let's get, you know, let's get that going. That's the best way to do it. And it's sort of amazing that, you know, that's a novel concept.
Well, I think we are doomed to end up agreeing.
Wow. Well, that's not necessarily true, because we haven't really delved into sort of media treatment of Obama versus media treatment of Hillary, and, you know, the significance of Saturday Night Live or any of that. I mean, I'm sure we have. I don't know if that was, if we were segueing into a wrap up there, but there's plenty for us to disagree on yet.
Well, maybe we can leave that for another show. This can be a cliffhanger ending.
Yeah. What's going to happen?
What's going to happen? What are they going to disagree on next? Well, anyway, but I do think you know, the next 5-6 weeks we'll see a different chapter in the campaign and a different chapter in the media coverage.
I'm actually really looking forward to it. I think it is as exciting a new beginning as has happened in this campaign, and I am most excited to see sort of, I guess, how these two candidates deal with, you know, what their new media approach is going to be. Are we going to see, you know, Hillary, like, hanging out in the back of the plane like her husband would have done? Are we going to see Obama, you know, sort of reacting churlishly and, you know, arms crossed and being unhappy about this the way he appears to have done, you know, in a reaction to the San Antonio?
I can guarantee you that's not, you're not going to see that again.
Well, but I just think it's really, it's just an interesting time to see, you know, this is like a next level stage for both of these candidates, saying, like, each of us have, you know, for Hillary Clinton, it's sort of like a second chance to be in the game. And for Obama, it is, you know, it's a consolidation of being a front runner and sort of how does he comport himself going forward now that it's a little bit more challenging. I think it's going to be interesting and ultimately so much better for the voters, because it's just, you know, it's, to borrow a phrase from Anderson Cooper, it's keeping them honest.
You are just so gosh darn optimistic and sunny-sided.
Well, you know, I'm a Canadian. I just want to.
I know it's a Canadian thing. Well, anyway, we'll dig up more that we can disagree with for next time. But
okay.
But thanks for playing along here. I've had a good time.
Me too. Always a pleasure, David.
See you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.